we spoke of the difficulties of the mental being during our meet last. The difficulties that the mind has in seizing the Supreme Reality as it presents itself to the human consciousness. The difficulties are indeed many, and the ancients have devised a number of methods to alleviate the difficulties. To take one instance, let us start with a story, a famous story in one of the Upanishads. There was a great sage, Varuna by name, who had indeed known the reality in his own way. And because he had known, there were always disciples, seekers who were flocking to him to know from him what is there to be known. One morning, his own son approached him and said, "Lord, teach me of the Eternal." In those days, teachers didn't teach theory. They did not have books. They did not make the disciples write. They did not verbally teach what they knew. Their method was different, which we are on the verge of rediscovering today in the field of education. They believed in igniting the flame, in communicating the spark that would grow in the being of the seeker, the being of the student. So he called his son and said, "You wish to know the Eternal? It is the food, it is the life force, the eye, the mind, the ear." It made no sense to the boy. So he said, "Know that from which all things are born, and being born by which they live, and at the end of the living in which they pass. Know that Eternal." The boy said, "Yes." And he concentrated in his mind. He brooded over the words of his father and tried to know what is that from which all things are born, by which all lives, and in which things enter into their passing. He came back to his father after a while, after some days, and told him, "Food is the Eternal, for by food it appears all things are born. Obviously by food they are sustained, and in the great food they pass." The father heard him and said, "Know the Eternal, do askesis, for askesis is the Eternal." The boy went back, again brooded over the Eternal in his mind, in his consciousness. And when he next met his father, he told him that prana, the life force, is the Eternal. For from life force indeed are all beings born. By this energy of life, all things are sustained, and in the great mass of life, all beings pass. The father nodded and once again told him, do askesis, for askesis is the eternal. He went back, brooded further in his consciousness, and he returned to his father, said, the mind is the eternal, for the mind it appears, all are born, all are projected into existence. The mind they are maintained, and into mind they pass. Still, the father said, do askesis, for the askesis is the eternal. Bewildered, the young seeker goes back, continues his askesis, broods further, comes back, tells his father, knowledge is the eternal. For out of knowledge it appears that things come into being. By knowledge they are maintained, and into knowledge they pass. Do askesis on the eternal, repeated the father. And once again the boy goes back, broods over the eternal, and when he came back next, his face was beaming with joy. He said, bliss is the eternal, for out of bliss all creation comes to be. By the underlying bliss all is sustained, and into the undying bliss all enter. The father did not impose further askesis on the seeker, for he had indeed traversed the whole range of the becoming of the eternal, the supreme reality manifests itself as food, as matter, as life force, as prana, as mind, as knowledge, what we would call in our parlance the truth knowledge, as bliss, what we call the ananda, about which the Upanishad says, who indeed could live if there were not this undying bliss sustaining the creation? But for this bliss in the ether could man breathe. Bliss is the essential characteristic of this creation. If we creatures do not perceive this feature, inalienable feature of bliss, but are constantly seized with the impacts of pain and suffering, it is because we are half blind, we are unseeing. We have the eyes to see, but we refuse to see. We limit ourselves in the walls of our ego, guard ourselves from the impacts of the world. And when the mighty impacts from the universal forces impinge upon us, in our petty limitations we shrink. And that shrinkage, translated in mental terms, in sensational terms, is what is called pain. If only we could enlarge ourselves who could break through the walls of ignorance and ego, every contact would be a vibration of bliss. Sri Aurobindo cites, refers to this legend of the realization of Brahman by the son of Varuna as one capital way for the human mind to realize the reality, to realize on each plane of being, comprehend on each grade of consciousness, go ahead, but integrate in yourself the lower one before you go into the next, and thus cover step by step, plane by plane, the graded becoming of Brahman till you arrive at the highest. In so doing, you leave out nothing. You realize the divine existence, the divine soul in itself, as also the expressed divine becoming, the nature soul. So in both the aspects, the passive and the active, you realize the divine reality. There are indeed other ways of realizing the Supreme. We have seen how in the yoga of knowledge, the aspirant withdraws his gaze from the outer objects, detaches his consciousness from the objects of ego, of desire, things behind which the senses and the mind run, and after a certain degree of detachment is arrived at, he turns his gaze inward, locates the center of his self, and becomes aware of his inner being. In the first stages, when one thus becomes aware of the self as detached from nature, from the million formulations of nature, the poise in which the self reveals itself is one of witness. It observes, it watches, but it does not involve itself. That is the first stage. As your identification with the witness self deepens, the poise changes. The self puts on an aspect of greater immobility, a silence in which nothing moves. It does not even look at what is going on. It is self-absorbed, silent, austere, alone. When you station yourself in the bosom of that silence, that self all looks like figures, like figments, names and forms moving about, and they all look lifeless. Still deeper, as you pursue your quest, you come to an area where everything is unknown and unknowable. the mental faculties just drop. Only the consciousness is awake and it realizes that it cannot know. When it looks at the world from that station, all looks unreal. All looks like a froth on the surface of the ocean. It is possible to realize the reality in this aspect. Remember, it is only an aspect. Further, this unknown and the unknowable can be realized according to the bent of the soul, either as an absolute reality, absolute sheer existence, or as a non-existence, a nihil, a zero in which everything disappears. These are certain stages, types of realizations that one can have in the quest for the reality. Whichever way you pursue the quest in this way line, the world stands out. The universe remains what it is. You are absorbed in yourself. This way certainly is not open to the seeker of the integral truth. It is possible for the seeker, after he has detached himself from the outer preoccupations, to ascend to the heights of his own spiritual mind, realize this pure existence there at the height of his mind, and project himself in the universe in the way of the becoming of the Self, and realize the same Self as the All. All is an expression of that Self. Not merely that, he sees that each form has a certain reality, because the Self informs each form. In each there is the indwelling Self. The Self is in each. The Self is there as each. It fills the universe. And it is not yet exhausted. It transcends. It is possible in knowledge to grasp this reality. But in practice, in day-to-day life, one is apt to lose oneself in the mechanics of nature. One loses oneself in nature only as long as one looks upon nature as something alien to the Self, as something foreign to the Self, as described in the philosophy of the Sankhyas, where they look upon the whole creation in terms of nature, of the soul and nature. There is one mighty nature which is self-existent, self-operative, mechanical in its movements, but there are a million souls, and the activity of the Self, of the nature, is reflected in this soul, in the individual Self that watches. The very watching, the very witnessing of the soul operates as the sanction for the nature. And their philosophy is that once you awaken to this state of things and detach yourself refuse the sanction of the soul, the activity of nature comes to a standstill as far as your particular soul is concerned. So the result is a realized man, a soul which has realized its being, identity with the divine, it cancels the cosmic existence. So whether if one is active in the dynamics, he misses the static. If one remains in the static Brahman, one loses connection with the active dynamization of the same Brahman. The solution is in the individual. The bridge between the passive and the active aspects of the reality, between God and nature, between the creator and creation, the bridge, the living bridge, is man. Because he epitomizes in himself the divine. If the divine reality contains both the aspects in itself, the passive and the active, so does man. There is a level at which all is static, all is passive, silent. There are levels where there is movement, there is action, but they are not compartmentalized. There are walls of ignorance, indeed, which separate the one from other. But as one takes steps to thin and to dissolve these walls of separativity, it is realized that after all, action takes place on the bosom of the silence. It is the passive reality which sustains and pours itself into the active manifestation. It is in the measure in which man develops his consciousness in a comprehensive way, combines in himself his awareness of the static reality, and comprehends the various formulations in manifestation. In a word, the active reality, that he proceeds and succeeds in embodying in himself the divine reality in manifestation. This, in short, is the theme of the chapter, the active and the passive Brahman in the synthesis of yoga. Last time I had occasion to mention to you about a mantra that Sri Aurobindo had given to Champaklal in the very beginning of his career here. This time I have brought the text of the message given by Mother to Champaklal on the first day of his work. As you are all aware, he has been a worker with Mother and Sri Aurobindo during the last 4 decades, without break, continuous, and has been in certain ways a model for other workers. And the message that the Mother gave him, and which has sustained him all through, he was kind enough to share with me last week, and I thought you would be interested. I have written a small note on the message and entitled it "The Ideal Worker." A number of sheets had to be typed for the mother. An inmate of the ashram did it in record time and neatly. When the file was handed to the mother, I was expecting her usual smile of appreciation and acceptance. But she kept quiet, turned to someone and remarked, "Mere labor." I was struck. For the first time it dawned on me that only the quantum of work is not enough in action in yoga, nor the elegance of form. Something else is required to turn work into worship. It is the spirit in which the work is done, the consecration that is brought to bear, that is most important. The attitude with which one works is the prime factor. Here are the guidelines given by the mother to an ideal worker whose name has become a byword in our ashram for dedicated service to the divine. And this is the text. Be simple. Be happy. Remain quiet. Do your work as well as you can. Keep yourself always open to me. This is all that is asked from you. Be your natural self. My explanation. Be your natural self. Do not load the mind with any sense of importance of your role. Be just what you are, a child and servant of the divine, with such equipment as you have been given. Be simple. Do not tease yourself with notions of your inadequacies or fear of failure. After all, the work is being done not by your capacities or powers, but by the divine Shakti to which you have to open yourself. Have trust in the divine and do not torment yourself with complexes of inferiority or insufficiency. Be happy. Do not excite yourself and throw your energies pell-mell. Effective work is done only when you are collected and calm within. Otherwise, there is waste. The atmosphere is spoiled and the work suffers. Whatever the circumstances, hold yourself in your poise. Remain quiet. Exert yourself quietly and to the best of your ability. Serve according to your best light. Deliberately summon all the faculties that are to participate in the work before you and put in your best. Remember, the best of today prepares you for a greater best tomorrow. Be always at your peak. Do your work as well as you can. Do not be centered in yourself, your abilities, or disabilities. The most you can do on your own is but a trifle and of little significance in yoga. What is important is that you should keep yourself open and receptive to the divine, to the higher consciousness and force that is to guide and embody itself in you. This is easier if you are fortunate in having a human embodiment of the divine, with whom you can enter into direct relation, to whom pause. Keep yourself always open to me. This is your part. Simplicity without complications and artificialities of attitude and form. A cheerful spirit quietude in poise and freedom from excitement in work, full exertion of yourself without lethargy or incomplete will, constant opening to the guiding light and effectuating force of the mother. That is all that is asked from you. All else will be done for you by the Divine, to whom you leave all the results of your work, all the responsibilities of the situation, in love and joy. Questions? Yes. He himself explains that he didn't stop with it. Most of the yogis, at any rate in India, they stop with that and erect philosophies and work out teachings on that basis, as if it were the soul of a possible experience. Sri Aurobindo explains how he waited and found his consciousness opening on that basis to higher levels of consciousness, where the contents of the larger being revealed themselves step by step. So this is a capital experience of liberation from nature, the lower nature, the cosmic nature in ignorance. Once one is established unshakably in that immutability, uninvolved, thereafter one gets the proper perspective, the proper standing to measure, to evaluate, and to go ahead. It was only 2 or 3 days ago that the mother was complaining, perhaps complaining is not the word, but explaining, that the falsehood is again and again falling upon her. And she said, it is worse than physical torture. If it was physical torture, she could bear it. But this falling of falsehood continuously, it is much more than she can bear. She said that the difference in consciousness has become so much. That every touch brings an ordeal. Her actual words were, falsehood is falling upon her again and again. Whether she meant the falsehood of the world outside, falsehood in the universe, or falsehood in the small world constituted by all of us, is more than I can say. But I do feel it is the responsibility of each one to see that in his or her individual life there should be no falsehood. So that when each person thinks of her, when each person sends her love to her in her present state, it reaches in its purity. In this atmosphere, thoughts have power, good or bad. So they go and reach their destination. And if each one can direct one's thought or love, feeling with as much purity in personal life as possible, that is sure to be of help. His consciousness has always been fused in hers. Even as he lives in the atmosphere in her. So her consciousness directs as before, as powerfully as ever. It is only her outer consciousness that I wouldn't say withdrawn, it is indrawn. But all things are still guided and directed by her. She is in touch in her own way with everything that goes on. She asked someone last week, is, how are things? And he said, yes, everything is all right. Because he didn't want to tell all details to mother. He said, everything is all right. He said, no, you are saying everything is all right, but I know things are not all right. Then she spoke to him that there is a good deal of disharmony in the atmosphere, and that is delaying things. So somehow it is this disharmony that should be eliminated. Spoke to him quite for some time. Brahman as power is Shakti. Brahman itself as power, as consciousness, as existence, as bliss. So when you speak of Shakti, it is a power of active Brahman, power of active. Difficulties of the mental being. So, our next step is to go to the cosmic consciousness when we meet next.